folks, welcome into episode 3 of The Statement Game. I am your host, Jeff Suing, along with my partner in crime, Pat Barker. We are, this feels very back-to-back with episode 2 going into episode 3. Number 1, this is kind of when we're going to be releasing these things. We're hoping to have some consistency coming up here. But the other part about us recording today is that such earth-shattering news has happened in the NBA, and the Super Bowl is coming up. This is truly quite a magical time. You know what I mean? Like, the MLB is going to sneak in at some point during this week and being like, Alex Bregman signed with the Detroit Tigers, you know, for $30 million a year. And we're going to be like, shut up, nerd. It's football and basketball time right now. But man, oh man, did we have a crazy weekend in sports. With that, I want to bring in my guy, my soulmate, my sports soulmate. I want to bring in Pat Barker. My guy, Pat, how was your weekend? How you doing? Are you recovered from all this gigantic sports news?
Are we talking Pro Bowl games? What are we?
Did you see the perfect punt competition? Oh my God, Jack Fox. Which, by the way, Jack Fox is too cool of a name for a punter. Don't do that anymore.
Yeah, Jack Fox. Yeah, that sounds like the first draft of the James Bond, like James Bond's name. Before they were like, it's a little too cool.
Let's exactly
tail it back.
It's exactly.
I did not. I did not see. I was just using it as a punchline. Did you actually watch the Pro Bowl game?
Well,
how do you know specifically?
I was in a bar. I was in a bar. All right. I was in a bar and they had it on the television and it happened to be the punt competition where they're trying to softly boot 20-yard punts into big barrels. I feel like it's one of those things that they were like, this is a Pro Bowl game. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure if you gave me enough cracks, I'm kicking a ball into one of those cylinders.
But by the same token, have you ever seen the bunting derby in Japan?
Yes.
Shit is lit, dude. So I'm not against the punt competition.
Yeah, we obviously don't need to spend like any time on the Pro Bowl games. But yeah, anytime they try to do anything kitschy or fucking fun, it isn't as cool as how they do it in another country. You know what I mean? Like, anytime they try to like dumb down whatever the All-Star game is.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work like it does there.
And this is where, to pull back the curtain, this is where our show goes horribly off the rails every time. We talk about we have to be quick, we have to set a clock, we set time limits on these things. And then you ask me, how was my weekend? And I just make an offhand joke about the Pro Bowl, and next thing you know, we're talking about Japanese bunting competitions, and we could do this for another 20 minutes. So for the sake of the show, I'm going to pull back from that.
I appreciate
you. I watched the Pro Bowl. Not here to talk about Japanese bunting. My weekend was fine. I'm fine. Today is my 20-year anniversary in the comedy business.
Hey!
I'm excited about. 20 years ago today, I did my first Bringer show. And yeah, it went pretty well. And here I am 20 years later, still just surviving enough to warrant not quitting. But not being nearly successful enough to, you know, justify not quitting.
I wish I could express to the people that are listening that, like, what percentile you're like in the 90th percentile of success, and it's still really hard where you are. You know what I mean? Like, you've written for TV, you've written for, you know, these big, you know, award shows. You've got the roast battle thing going on. Like, you have all this like amazing stuff going on, and still you really have to be in that top 1%.
I would argue that of anybody who has ever picked up a microphone and attempted to do comedy, I'm in the top 99.999
percentile.
Fact. I'm making a living doing comedy. That being said, that particular percentile, all it takes is 2 bad months in LA and you're completely fucked. 20 years of work, and you're like, you're working, you know, at McDonald's or whatever.
You don't make jokes anymore.
Dude, if you're top 99 percentile as far as like a plumber, you're like you're like on the Mount Rushmore of plumbers. You know what I mean? Like any other job, it's a great position to be in. In my world, it means less than nothing. But either way, choosing today on the 20 years to celebrate the wins, ignore the losses for a day, I will get back to feeling like a failure tomorrow. Today, feel pretty good.
Hell yeah, dude. Do you remember any funny story about your first couple times getting up?
No, I mean, just like, yeah, okay. So, I mean, my first time went well. It was a bringer. I didn't know what a bringer was. They're like, oh, it's something called a new talent night. And we put up new talent. And all you have to do is bring a bunch of people to see your talent. And I'm like, oh, that doesn't sound like a bringer at all. So I did it. It was in a little now defunct comedy club in a hotel in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. The first time went pretty well. The second time went pretty well. The third time, I got talked into doing a talent show at my college that was being run by a couple kids in my international relations class. They were like, oh, yeah, you do comedy? You should come to the talent show. And I was like, will there be other comedians? And they were like, yeah, absolutely. There were not other comedians. We were in the student center. And, like, there were, like, magicians and jugglers and shit, but there were no comedians. And I had to follow spoken word poetry. Some woman who was just like, the darkness of death creeps upon us. She's doing that whole shit. And then, you know, when the room is nice and depressed and bored, I think it was like 50-50, but nobody was in a good mood. And they didn't even introduce me as a comedian. They're just like, next up, Pat Barker. So I have to get up there and be like, hey, I'm a comedian. Here's some dumb jokes. I don't even think I prefaced it by saying I'm a comedian. I think I just went into material and they're like, is this more spoken word? They had no idea what was going on. I bombed horrifically. That was my first time bombing. And I say, if you could survive the first bomb, you're probably in it, you know, for a little bit. So
yeah, yeah, yeah. I remember, I certainly remember my first bomb. It was the first show I went, same as you, right? Went well. Then the second show, I was like, I was like, you know what? I'm going to put on my own comedy show for my second show. And, I went in there and did it at a bar where, I didn't like promote it. We were just like going to do it that night and they didn't like put up flyers or anything. So it was a bar in Joliet, Illinois, where everybody didn't know that comedy was about to happen. And, it went really terrible. I will give you, two guesses as to who the first comedian in Los Angeles I met was. We both know this comedian, and I want you to know that it's about the most hilarious comedian you could, and hilarious being like, oh God, that's the first person you met doing comedy. I'll give you two guesses.
Okay, so it's not,
they're tied in with the roast battle show.
It's not any of our. It's not any of our friends.
No, that's nope.
Kenny Lyon.
No, that's a good guess.
Boon Shakalaka.
Yeah, buddy.
Well, you have to tell, you know, the viewers if they don't know who Boon Shakalaka was.
I mean, I don't even know how. Boon was just a sassy being. I don't know where they came from. I don't know where they went. They used to do, was it, what's the song?
Proud Mary.
Proud Mary. But at the beginning of every roast battle,
big wheels keep on turning.
That was when that show was like just a madhouse.
And it
may still be that way. Like, I have no idea, but I remember the first time I saw it, it was like that. And then you had Josh coming up shirtless and his, you know, boobs are bouncing all around.
Still have that.
Dave. Okay.
Still have Josh. Everybody else is gone, including Boone, who we fear has gone. Boone. Yeah. The backstory on Boone is Boone was an elderly black gentleman. I don't know, somewhere on some sort of sexuality spectrum. Sassy being was a great way to put it. Every week, Boone dressed up as Tina Turner and performed Proud Mary to a confused audience. They started confused, and by the end, they were really into it. It always worked. And then Boone would retreat to the patio of the Comedy Store where they would sell merchandise that they had clearly stolen. But you could get some good deals. You could get some really good deals on things that were, you know, hot. And then after the pandemic, we never saw Boone again. Rumors have swirled, but nobody can verify Boone's location. I hope like the end of like a bank heist movie, Boone is lying on a beach somewhere right now, beyond rich, but probably not.
Yes, I actually like kind of wish that Boone just like went back to selling insurance. You know what I mean? Like that's actually what they were doing the whole time.
Yeah, just the most normal pay job possible.
Normal life ever. And then would come and do Proud Mary at Roast Battles on Sundays. Man, Sassy being. I'm glad we started the show off with.
Again, we got out of the Pro Bowl thing, and then we steered it into an explanation about an elderly, potentially trans black person who might be dead now.
Or is going to call you about your auto premium and see how you're doing. Look, we got a lot to talk about today. I don't need to regale you with tales of ice skating this weekend. I didn't fall. This is the second time I've gone. I haven't fallen either time. Butt really hurts. Those are the muscles that I work that I don't know I have. So the butt muscles, that's what's really working when I'm skating. But didn't fall, so nothing funny happened there. We're going to get some depressed Jeff in this episode just because of the content that we're talking about. But first, I have to imagine there's a lot of depressed Jeffs hanging out in Dallas right now, because out of absolutely nowhere, so much so that I thought it was a joke. I thought somebody had been hacked. I was sure ESPN had been hacked.
Same.
The Dallas Mavericks traded Luka Doncic to the Los Angeles Lakers for Anthony Davis and a 2029, I believe, first-round pick. They also got Max Christie or something. The main players are those two names. And I was and still am pretty floored by this move. Now, I think what's even more interesting about this deal is how Dallas has handled it from when the trade happened. But I'm interested to get your take. Like, this was one of those things where you almost, it's not for the rest of your life necessarily going to be something where you like, I remember where I was when Luka got traded, but it's close, man. This is one of the most surprising trades I can ever remember in any sport.
Yeah, it's right up there. I also thought it was a hack because it doesn't make any sense. Nothing about it makes sense. There is no part of it. Now that we've had time to like sit back and let the dust settle where you're like, okay, I can see what the thought process was. There is information that we do not know. Information that has to be so incredibly damning that the Mavericks are praying, or Luka is praying, somebody's praying that it never sees the light of day. I'm talking Luka had an affair with Mark Cuban's wife type of shit. Nothing else makes sense. It truly doesn't work from any other angle. I've spent hours thinking about this and wondering how could it possibly, because it's not just that the trade was made. It's that the Mavericks approached the Lakers. The trade was consummated, obviously, very quickly, because once the Lakers verified that it was actually the Mavericks calling them and not, you know, like the Howard Stern show trying to prank them, I'm sure they accepted instantly. You have to think that there were no talks with other teams leading up to this, because the Mavericks could have gotten so much more for Luka if they did even a little bit of due diligence. If there had been any ramp where they're like, we're considering trading Luka, They could have gotten five firsts. You look at the return for Karl Anthony Towns, and you're like, well, surely you would get way more than that for Luka. It seems to me they made no effort to trade him beforehand. This was an emergency decision. Mm-hmm. They called the Lakers specifically, which made me think Luka was behind the scenes demanding a trade to go to the Lakers. That doesn't seem to be the case. He seems to be heartbroken that this happened. None of it makes any sense. And the Mavericks have got, I mean, the two rumblings that I'm hearing that, again, don't make any sense are, number one, that they were worried about Luka's conditioning. They were worried about his weight. Obviously, they have leaked that report to try to justify it in some way. That would be information, because the crux of that information is he came into training camp at this weight. This would be a decision that you took months to make. You would want to open it up to a bidding war. It doesn't seem other teams even knew that Luka was available. They contacted one team and took the first offer that they had, or at least that's the way it seems on the surface. The other thing that I'm hearing is defense wins championships, and, you know, they feel better with AD. They feel he pairs better with Kyrie. Look, two things. Number one, defense wins championships, but defense has to be on the floor. You're worried about Luka's conditioning. AD spends half the season injured every year. So I don't buy that. Number two, for anybody who truly believes that this is a basketball decision, I want you to keep in mind that all of these owners are in the business of making money. Mark Cuban, maybe more than others, actually cares about the basketball side. He is a fan. But these guys want to make money. Anthony Davis does not make this a championship team. Therefore, they're in the exact same boat that they were in with Luka, which is they have about a 2% chance of things breaking right and them winning. This doesn't put them over the edge to win a championship. All it does is piss off and alienate their fans, an entire generation of fans. This is an exceptionally poor business move. As a businessman, as an owner, you're costing yourself hundreds of millions of dollars probably by dealing the face of the franchise. This is a franchise that, despite only winning, you know, one championship, in my entire lifetime, right?
Mm-hmm.
This has still been enormously profitable, and one of the main reasons is Dirk was the face of the franchise. Now you have Luka, who's Dirk 2.0, and you trade him out of nowhere. It's a really poor move. If you get better from a basketball perspective, it's only marginally, and I don't even buy that that's the case. So I'm confused. I don't get it. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. First, a little housekeeping there. I'm not sure what I know Mark Cuban sold some stake. Now, I'm not sure if he still has, like, a say in whether stuff like this happens.
Right.
But, yeah, that guy is not sitting amongst the crowd anymore if he had anything to do with this decision. And I frankly wouldn't go there anyway, because I'm sure that most people assume that he is still, you know, the controlling share of the Mavericks, which I know he is not.
I think he has 25%. I want to say he sold off the vast majority.
But I don't think he has. Yeah, I don't think he has the controlling share anymore. So there could have been somebody else that okayed this trade, because rest assured, somebody okayed this trade, right? The other thing is, you know, they're talking about, like, well, defense wins championships, you know, oh, to win at the highest level, you need all this sort of stuff. Luka took you to the finals last year. Like, it was just last year that on his back you were in the finals. And I don't want to hear about what happened when you got there. You ran up against a buzzsaw. The Celtics were so clearly the best team in basketball last year. They were just going to win the NBA championship. Too talented everywhere. You're not going to run into the Boston Celtics every year. And if you have a guy like Luka, you have a chance to make it to the end every single year. Then they're talking about his conditioning, and I'm like, he's 25. I understand he's a little fat. He's built a little like me, right? He's kind of a chubby guy. It's embarrassing for me. He's kind of a chubby guy, and yes, he gets blown by on defense and all these different sorts of things. I look at the All-Star rosters this year. And you know a name that I still see on the All-Star roster? James Harden. And you're not going to tell me that Luka is in worse shape than James Harden. They're both below, they're almost identical sorts of players, except Luka's guided his teams to more success than James Harden has in his career. So none of the reasoning makes sense. Them putting him on blast like they have, like, it didn't seem like he was. And again, maybe more stuff comes out. But right now, it just looks like they were that guy's kind of fat and he can't play defense. And we think there's a specific way you need to win when you play basketball, unless you win a championship during this Kyrie Irving and Anthony Davis pairing.
Yeah.
This is one of the worst trades in history. Not to mention the fact, which you didn't even touch on yet, which I will let you now. Again, the Lakers, right place, right time. For a generation, this is like conspiracy theory shit, right? Every week now we're bringing up some. It's the rest with the Chiefs, and this week it's going to be the NBA is conspiring to get Luka to the Los Angeles Lakers so that the Lakers are relevant, you know, for the next decade. It's so frustrating that team time after time after time gets bailed out. They were up against it. It was over. They had no picks. They had LeBron and Anthony Davis. It wasn't working. All the contracts they had were terrible. They couldn't possibly find a way out of this thing. And here comes one of the top five players in basketball. And some, for whatever reason, the Dallas Mavericks are just like, specifically Lakers, we want you. That's insane, man. It's insane. Even if he was like, I'm not going to re-sign, right? Much like De'Aaron Fox did. De'Aaron Fox said, I'm not going to re-sign. Even if he told you that to your face, you're at least getting, number one, what De'Aaron Fox just got. Number two, you're getting the Kawhi Leonard package, right? You're getting a gaggle of draft picks. You're getting everything you want. Luka tries to win for 2 years with whatever team that doesn't, and then he leaves and goes to the Lakers himself. That's fine. You can't just talk to one team and be like, well, the guy that plays 45 games a year is good enough for me.
Yeah. For a franchise that, look, I don't think it's any secret that any sports league would want teams in New York, LA to be successful. They're the biggest markets in the country. Of course, you look at the Yankees-Dodgers World Series and the ratings for that. Of course, that's what they want. And in baseball, it's easy because you don't have a salary cap. So you could just, you know, the Yankees and Dodgers are going to have an advantage over everyone else. The NBA is right. A little bit trickier. When you look at the Lakers historically, they traded for Wilt. They traded for Shaq. Traded for LeBron. They traded for Kareem. They traded for Luka. That's a lot of really, like, top-tier all-time players in their prime being traded to the Lakers. I'm not a deep state conspiracy guy. I like to believe everything's on the up and up. But there's a lot of smoke around this fire. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I'm not even making, like, a Palisades joke right now. Like, you know, but this is, it's, I couldn't argue for a second with the conspiracy theorist who said the NBA rigged this thing. My only question is, what motivation do the Mavericks have? You would think that the NBA would rig it and at least make it look plausible. But that they don't, if the fix is in, they don't seem to have any interest in this, in making it look realistic. It would be one of the only logical explanations. When a conspiracy theory is the most logical explanation, that's how you know you've entered an insane situation. But yeah, the Lakers get rich. Now, that being said, I do want to say this. I don't think the Lakers are going to win a championship with LeBron and Luka.
Oh, I mean, maybe not, but that you're talking about the next decade. You're not talking about the next 2 years now.
For sure, yeah. I mean, yeah, they have the face of the franchise going forward. And, you know, even just, again, we talk about sports as a business. Like, even if they don't win a championship, the amount of money they're going to make with Luka as the face of the franchise is going to be astronomical. I mean, we, you know, we talked on our last podcast, our previous Rest in Peace podcast, about how the $700 million for Shohei Ohtani was a bargain. Certainly the $250 million, or whatever the max ends up being now for Luka, is going to be a similar bargain. Just based on, you know, the revenue he's going to generate. So the Lakers come out of it, you know, smelling like roses again. I don't think that they're, because I do think from a basketball perspective, there are valid criticisms of Luka and how the defense and him and LeBron on the floor together, I could see being a sieve defensively and really being a problem. But, you know, you're really grasping at straws to try to justify in any way that this is not a huge win for the Lakers. It clearly is.
Yeah, and I don't know how they just keep getting away with this, but here we are, and yet another, you know, yet another one of the most talented, you know, players in a league.
And also, you were talking about Luka's body type. Let's not forget who is the best player in the NBA right now.
Nikola Jokic.
The league is built for fat white men more than it's ever been in my entire life.
Fat white men are for some reason. There's more fat white men succeeding at a high level in the NBA than there is in the MLB, which is a huge MLB problem, if you ask me. It's basically Kyle Schwarber, and that's a wrap. We need more fat white guys in the MLB. That's a rant for another day. On that, though, I think that, like, you know, there's also been this sentiment, and this is a small thing, but there's also been this sentiment online where it's like, now Luka's going to be motivated, and he's going to get in shape. And we're going to see a whole different. No, you're not. He's going to be the exact same that he's always been. He's going to do exactly what he wants to do. He's going to drink beer in the off season. He's not really going to train that hard. There's going to be one hilarious video of him training where he, like, really slowly touches cones every now and again and then smiles at the camera and gives a thumbs up or something. But he's still going to be really good because he's just super good at basketball. I don't know. He's a basketball savant. Like, there's just, I don't know. I am so fucking frustrated.
His game doesn't rely on strength or speed.
Yes.
So it almost doesn't matter. Like, you know, Zion Williamson's game relies on explosiveness. Yeah. So, yeah, you don't want that guy to be 340 pounds. It's really hard to be explosive when you're 340 pounds and stay on the floor and your entire game is, you know, banging in the post.
Yep.
Luka, yep. Everything Luka is crafty, just like Harden. He's got range, just like Harden. He doesn't need to be in good shape. It doesn't matter.
Yep.
It might matter. Look, it might matter in 8 years when his body starts breaking down and he doesn't have the longevity of other great players. Sure. Also, maybe LeBron's going to put him on to whatever LeBron's been doing. That's let him be dominant into his fucking 50s. Maybe LeBron will be like, hey, here's my hyperbaric chamber. Here's the blood that I drink. here's, you know, he'll put him onto whatever that diet is.
Yeah, sure. We can, maybe there will be a new and improved Luka. I highly doubt it. I have been wondering this since this trade happened, and then we'll move on to sadder news in the NBA. I wonder if this trade happens without the new CBA, because they're doing all this stuff, like they're calling him fat and they're talking about DJ defense wins championships and they're doing all this work to try to see what sticks and works as a PR win for them. And I'm kind of just wondering if they were like staring down the barrel of giving him this Supermax extension that maybe takes them over the second apron or something. And the second apron has become so punitive that they were like, well, if we can get a cost controlled Anthony Davis at a lower cap number, and there's not going to be that sort of money there for Kyrie, then, you know, we'll be able to add different pieces to make it more of a team thing than focusing on just a one specific player thing. So I'm curious whether you think, because look, this is like a shocking, this is like this one's out of nowhere. Like a lot of the other biggest trades in NBA history, there was at least some rumors that something was going to happen and a player forced his way to here or player forced his way to there. This just came out of nowhere. There was seemingly no forced movement there on the player side. So I'm just wondering how much the CBA maybe played into this. And maybe with that causing more of these things to happen. You know, we mentioned KD last week. Is that next?
Here's what I'll say. I'm not a capologist. I'm not totally familiar with the inner workings of the CBA, so maybe. If that is the case, if the Dallas Mavericks, and by the way, Dallas is one of the biggest cities in America. It's one of the biggest markets in America. This is not Memphis. You know what I'm saying? This is a legitimate sports city. If the Dallas Mavericks made this move because of potential punitive damages for going over an apron, whatever that number is that they would have had to pay, I am of the belief that they cost themselves five times that much in just alienating the fan base.
Yeah, but teams don't think that way. You know that. You know that. They would much rather be like, you know what, I'm going to take the safety of, mm-hmm. I'm going to stay under these aprons because then I get to share, then I get the check, right? I get the check that teams that really go for it, the Suns, that the Warriors, I think the Knicks now, like those teams cut a check so other teams in the NBA can just kind of stay under those things and just make their money and own their little basketball team and maybe make the play-in tournament and things are all right.
That's fine. They're allowed to think that way. It's wrong. It's short-sighted. It's idiotic. I'm saying it's a poor business decision. I'm not saying it's impossible that that was the business decision. I'm saying it's stupid. I'm saying it's penny-wise and pound-foolish. I'm saying this not only as somebody who is a sports fan, but as somebody who, when I started comedy, I was managing a CVS at the time. I have a degree in business management. I understand this shit a little bit. And this reminds me very much of, you know, every year at CVS at the beginning of the year, we would get our hours for the year and they would cut our hours. Okay. Now, I understand you cut every store's hours by 20. All right. So I had 340 hours when I was making the schedule last year. Now I got 320. Okay. I get it. I might say, oh, what's 20 hours times a billion stores? It adds up. I understand. Now, all of a sudden, you don't have anybody who can. Have you been to a CVS recently? Have you tried to find an employee to help you with anything? It's impossible. Yeah. So what happened was now they don't have any employees to do anything. People started stealing. I've stolen from CVS. I am the most moral person I know. You know the first time I stole from CVS? I went and got the shit, and then I went up to the counter, and the self-checkout was broken, and I didn't know where the employee was. It was 3 o'clock in the morning. Where are they? I don't know. I had like $20 worth of shit. I just walked out. I'm like, it's not my job to ring this shit up. It's not my job to hunt somebody down to ring me up. Fuck that. No, I'm not doing it. So then, and there's a lot of people who have way worse morals than I do who didn't sit around waiting and looking for somebody. They're just like, fuck it. I'm just walking out with this shit. So everybody starts stealing the shit. So now they lock it up. So now if you want to buy a deodorant, you got to push a button and wait for somebody 7 to 10 business days to come and sell you a deodorant. I don't know if you saw this story, but Walgreens and all these places, they reported all these massive losses because they're like, oh, we're losing more money than we were when people were stealing the shit because now people can't even buy it. So you put all that together and it's like, yeah, I understand businesses sit there and they're like, where can we cut? Where can we cut? Where can we cut? There comes a point where you cut too deep. You cut too far into the budget and the money that you save with that cut ends up costing you in the long run because all you're doing is pissing off your base. And that's, if that was the Maverick strategy, congratulations on saving a few dollars. You fucked up an entire generation of fans who now hate you. Nicely done.
All right. Look, we have to get to the other big trade that happened. Because honestly, had the Luka thing not happened, this would have dominated headlines. This was a huge trade. This is a trade that resulted in Wemby getting his first true, this is the first person that gets a shot at being Wemby's running mate. That's a huge, huge deal when you think about the league. This is a deal that saw the Sacramento Kings try to cling to some sort of relevancy in a market that's a lot tougher than even like we're talking about Dallas. You got to put a product on the floor for the folks of Sacramento to be showing up and spending money and going to light the beam and all those sorts of things. And then the Bulls were also involved. And I'm sure that's why both of those teams made this deal, is because once the Bulls get involved, you just got to be rubbing your hands together and licking your chops. It's like, you know, one of those dogs. It's like when, you know, Sylvester is like fucking certain he's got Tweety Bird. And you know, it's like he's ties the napkin around his neck and he's got the fork and the knife and just like drool coming down his face, ready to eat Tweety Bird. Except this time he really did catch Tweety Bird and eat him. So here's the full details of the trade between the San Antonio Spurs, the Sacramento Kings, and my Chicago Bulls. The Sacramento Kings send De'Aaron Fox to the San Antonio Spurs, who send 3 first-round picks back to the Kings. As part of the deal, the Sacramento Kings and San Antonio Spurs got together and they talked about, like, hey, what's the shit we really don't want on our team? Can we find another team that might want that stuff? And then they were like, I know exactly who we should call right now. And so they called up the Chicago Bulls and they said, hey, do you want this stuff for Zach LaVine? And here, we'll even do you one better. You know that draft pick that San Antonio owns that you are in absolutely no risk of losing right now? You can have it back. We'll do you a favor. You can just have that pick back. Do whatever you want with it. Go out to dinner. Have a nice time. Go do your thing with your little first-round pick that you already had. And the Bulls were like, oh, my God, I like this so much that I'm going to trade you guys a second-round pick to take all your crap to give you Zach LaVine, who's playing at an all-star level. Uh-huh. And that's the trade. So now Wemby has De'Aaron Fox, his first legitimate running mate. They trade 3 first. Now, the Spurs still have like a dozen first to trade. So this like isn't even the big shot they can take. But they go out, they get De'Aaron Fox. The Kings, for their part in anything, they get a bunch of draft capital for De'Aaron Fox. And they get Zach LaVine. And we'll get to their part of it in a minute. And the Bulls, I just laid it out there. So, give me your thoughts on this deal. When this one came across, it's sort of weird because I feel like the Luka trade just like completely was a kick to the chest for everybody and nobody knew how to value anything for a minute there. But then like you have some time to sit with it. You have a night to think about it. What are your thoughts overall on the deal? Especially let's start with San Antonio and getting De'Aaron Fox. Does this feel like the right running mate for Wemby?
Yeah. Before I answer this question, to our new viewers, Jeff is a diehard Chicago fan. So just wanted to put that out there before you.
Yeah, I don't wear the hat. You got the Philly hats. And people hat. I'm sure people are surmising.
If I had your hair, buddy, I wouldn't wear the hat either. But
I'm not wearing a hat. But I'm really into Chicago sports, unfortunately, folks.
I am going to give most of the time on this to you. Here are my thoughts. For the Spurs, Wemby and De'Aaron Fox is as good as any 1-2 punch in the league, and significantly younger than most. With really no injury history, it's maybe a better version of what Embiid and Maxey could be in Philly. Definitely a healthier version, definitely a younger version. They're obviously younger than Luka and LeBron. They're as a whole, they're better than Jokic and, you know, whoever the second fiddle is there. If we're talking about Giannis and Dame, like Fox is way younger than Dame. I think it's a perfect fit. It works on every level, in my opinion. I think it's exactly what the Spurs needed. Whatever your thoughts on Chris Paul may be, you know, having him as sort of a mentor to De'Aaron Fox, you know, and that helps too. One of the best point guards to ever do it. It's a win across the board for the Spurs. And you now have, and it's also cost effective because Wemby is still on, you know, his rookie contract. So you have a few years of like, it's a win across the board. For the Kings, you did what you had to do. Everybody knew this was coming. You built your fan base up for the disappointment, and you got three firsts on the same day that Luka got one first. So, boy, that trade really helps the Kings because, A, it knocks it out of the news cycle, but, B, when you look closer, it's like, well, we got way more for De'Aaron Fox than the Mavs did for Luka.
You didn't even mention Zach LaVine. I just want to say that. Like, they got three firsts, and they got Zach LaVine. Like, that's
yeah, mainly because Zach LaVine is a short-term player, and as far as the short-term for the Kings go, their strategy is to run back DeMar DeRozan and Zach LaVine, and we saw how that works. So I don't. To me, this is strictly I'm looking at long-term. Zach LaVine on the Kings does not make them a contender, so I don't care. They take a step down going from De'Aaron Fox to Zach LaVine in my mind. When you consider both sides of the ball, that's what I think. Here's what I'll say about the Bulls. They're really bad at being the middleman. In life, you can make a lot of money by being the middleman. Out here in Hollywood, you could be an agent. Okay, so somebody wants to hire me to write for a TV show. If I have an agent, which I don't, I wish I did, if anybody out there, but I don't, I get all my gigs on my own. But if I had an agent, and that person got me a gig, I'd have to give them 10%. Even though they don't have the talent to write the jokes and they don't have the network to, you know, put on the show, they get 10% just for coordinating the match. Taxes are due soon. You have to get your money to Uncle Sam, but you don't know how much money you got to get. You need somebody to step in and kind of be the middleman. And they're like, I'll prepare your tax. I'll send it to Uncle Sam. All I ask is that you pay me X, right? There's a lot of need for middlemen in life. So in this case, I would think that the Spurs and Kings could swing this trade kind of on their own. I'll bet they could have gotten this done, just two teams. But they called the Bulls and said, we need a middleman. And the Bulls said, okay, I would love to help you. And then when it got to the part at the end where the Bulls are supposed to be like, all right, I'm sending a bill so I can get paid for my services, the Bulls instead got it backwards, and they were like, I'm just going to pay both of you for letting me be part of something so cool. It was really an honor to be part of this trade, and I'm stoked to be here, and now I'm going to pay you. And that's what they did. They were an accountant who paid their client to do their taxes. It's embarrassing, and I'm so sorry, Jeff.
Okay, all right. So I have to start this in a way that doesn't make me want to lose my mind, and I'm gonna crescendo. That's what's gonna happen. I'm gonna get to a point, and I'm gonna crescendo, and it's gonna be a great thing at the end here. As far as the Spurs go, I love it for the Spurs. Here's why. I already said, you know, they have enough draft capital to try this stuff out. This is obviously the best they could have gotten. Now, I'll tell you this much: if I am the Spurs, I am pretty pissed off that the Dallas Mavericks didn't call me. Now, perhaps it's because they're from the same state and they could poach fans from the Dallas Mavericks. Totally understand that. But boy, oh boy, would I have given up 8 first round picks if I was the Spurs. I would have traded the most first round picks in history to put Luka next to Wemby. That's just me. Maybe not everybody would do that. De'Aaron Fox, probably the best player you could get at an age range where you could see it working long term, right? Could they have made a play for, You know, Durant? I keep saying Durant. I don't even know if he's available. I fully expect that by the time we release this podcast and you download it, Kevin Durant will have already been traded for LeBron James or some crazy bullshit like that, because that's just how things work when we record the podcast. But the other thing I really like about it is you're bringing Fox in. You know he would like to resign. He wants to resign. You have a year and a half now to take a look at this pairing, right? if for whatever reason De'Aaron Fox and Wemby isn't the right pairing, you just trade De'Aaron Fox and you're still going to get a haul if you're the Spurs, and you go you use De'Aaron Fox to go get whoever that guy is, right? For whatever reason, Shea says, you know what? I don't want to be in Oklahoma City anymore. Boom. There you go. Here's De'Aaron Fox, and here's, you know, 37 first-round picks. I'll take Shea off your hands. So you're positioned to strike, as the Spurs often seem to be positioned because they are an intelligent franchise, and they're always ready to go. So there's nothing to not like about the San Antonio Spurs. Could there have been better fits? Certainly. I mean, you'd want to surround – you have to surround these two now with – shooters and shooters that can defend. I mean, a little less because Wemby's there, but you know, you need people that are going to shoot around these guys. But so could it have been a different, like, could not Zach LaVine, but a Zach LaVine archetype? Yeah, you could have like had something like that where it's just like he doesn't even need the ball, just throw him the ball, he's going to take a step back three and hit it in somebody's face. So great move for them. On the Kings' end, I think they traded De'Aaron Fox to where he wanted to be, still got three first-round picks, right? So they still got three first-round picks, and they brought in Zach LaVine. And I don't know what they're planning here. So either they're like, we're going to just ride this out, and we're going to see how this whole thing works. Maybe Sabonis and Keegan Murray and Devin Carter and Malik Monk are the other players you need to make the DeMar DeRozan, Zach LaVine thing work better than it did in Chicago. Theoretically, totally possible. All those players I named are better than anybody else those two were playing with in Chicago. But I think what this probably is, and this is what is going to fucking kill me, I think they're going to go into the offseason. I think Zach LaVine will have finished this season and played in the playoffs. Maybe they'll win a game. You know, they'll probably get bounced pretty early. I think they're going to make it to the offseason, and I think they're going to trade Zach LaVine again, and I think they're going to get a first-round pick by themselves. And that, my friend, is going to absolutely crush me. You may not be able to dig me out of the hole that I am going to go.
Wait until it ends up being two first-round picks, and the team they trade them to is the Chicago Bulls.
Dude, yeah. So then we get to the Bulls, and this is, you know, we've talked about how bad an owner Jerry Reinsdorf is. We had a bad owner draft a long time ago, and I remember you took him pretty early. It might have been your first pick or second pick. And he's certainly terrible. He's certainly the worst owner that has seven championships. It's insane that people hate Jerry Reinsdorf. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of insane that we hate this guy because he, like, had the Bulls dynasty. He wins a World Series with the White Sox, breaking in, I think it was at that time, 89-year-old curse, mm-hmm. drought, whatever it was. But we're in this place. I'm not sure that there is a worse front office in sports right now. They haven't won a single negotiation, Pat. They haven't won a single negotiation. Never one time. Not with an agent, not with a player. They didn't have to pay Vucevic what he's getting paid right now. Right now they're paying Patrick Williams $18 million a year because you couldn't lose young talent. They signed him to this deal. 5 years, $40 million deal in the offseason. And Patrick Williams is putting up 9 points a game and 3 rebounds a game. Like, this isn't a serious organization. Every single trade, the fact that to sign and trade DeMar DeRozan, to get DeMar DeRozan in the first place, they had to trade San Antonio this pick. San Antonio was just going to blow up the deal. I half expect that the Bulls were like, we'll give you a first round pick if you just let us sign him. And then the Spurs were like, okay. And that was like the first sign to everybody that you could just come and eat lunch when you're talking with the Bulls in negotiations. They are consistently too late on everything. And if you listen to everything that's said, when they are early, they're asking for too much, right? They could have been right on time with Zach LaVine. They could have been right on time trading DeRozan. They could have been on time trading Alex. They traded Alex Caruso to the Thunder, who have 30 first round picks, and all they got back was Josh Giddey. Josh Giddey in the last year of his, you know how bad Josh Giddey is? You ever watch Josh Giddey, Pat? You ever watch him play basketball? He's so bad. He's so bad at basketball. He's the most, like, people look at the box score and they're like, God damn, Josh Giddey had fucking 14, 7, and 8. This guy must be watch the game. He sucks out loud. I hate watching Josh Giddey, and they're going to sign him to a deal in this offseason. Dude, they're going to pay him $25 million a year in this offseason. Nobody else is even going to come close to that, and they're going to do it. The rest of this trade deadline is going to be trying to find the team, right, that is going to give you the best collection of second round picks that you can get for Nikola Vucevic. And then you're going to use those second round picks to, like, trade somebody else that shouldn't be on your roster, right? You're going to package the second round picks and Patrick Williams just to get off of his money. And then he's going to go somewhere else and he's going to be good, just like Lauri Markkanen did. I am so tired. I'm so fucking tired.
Just so you guys know, when Jeff says Josh Giddey gets 14, 7, and 8, those are the age ranges on his Tinder profile.
That's the other thing too. Like, he's also.
I was sitting on that joke. I'm like, how much longer is this fucking rant? I got a great Josh Giddey pedophile joke.
I'm so sorry. It's just like once or twice a year, I'm going to have an opportunity.
I get
to
it.
Shit on the board.
No, you have so many more opportunities. That's the thing.
I know. It's not even. It's partly not the Bulls' fault. It's like the entirety of Chicago sports fault right now. Like, fuck, dude. Ben Johnson better be awesome. Caleb Williams had better be awesome. I was like willing to accept my 7-9 for the rest of my life Chicago Bears with Justin Fields getting his head sat on and no receivers. I was going to be okay with that life. I really was. And then they were like, now we're going to take this, you know, the chosen one at the first with the first round pick. And then we're going to hire the coach and then we're going to do all this stuff. And it fucking better work, man, because nothing else in the city is working. Nothing else in the Kyle Tucker and with the Chicago Cubs is only going to carry me so far. I want the Bulls to be good. They were good. My life made sense when the Bulls were good. It was the 90s. Do you remember the 90s? How fucking awesome were the 90s, Pat? How are the 2020s? Okay. When the Bulls are good, the world is good. Okay. We need the Bulls to be good, and they can't be good when their front office is full of people that just get taken to the cleaners. This is like, they're like showing up at the pawn shop and they start with like, all right, I'm going to pawn, you know, this hand-me-down tea kettle, right, from my family. And then the pawn guy is like, all right, for me to hold that tea kettle, I'm going to also need your car. And then they're like, okay, I guess we just had to give him the car and I'll walk home. I'm okay with walking home. I don't know. I'm going to have a mental breakdown if I keep talking about this.
Oh, we're well past that point. If this isn't a mental breakdown, I would hate to see what the mental breakdown is. And I get it. I root for a basketball team that traded the third overall pick to move up to the first to take Markelle Fultz. And then the team that they traded with took Jason Tatum third. Yeah, I root for a team that drafted Mikal Bridges, who was the ultimate story. His mom worked for the franchise. She was like a janitor or a lunch lady or some shit. And then after they aired the video package about what a feel-good story it is, on draft night they traded him for a guy who almost died of a sesame seed allergy. These are things that I root for a team that in like back-to-back years was like we had a top three pick 20 straight years. And we got Joel Embiid one time and he's at least great when he's healthy. He's not healthy. I don't blame the organization for that. I mean, they did draft a guy who was already crippled, but at least he's good. The rest of the picks were Jahlil Okafor, Nerlens Noel, Dario Saric, who was like, I don't plan on leaving Turkey. They're like, that's fine, stay. We're drafting you anyway. Were it not for Embiid's super heroic efforts and lucking into Tyrese Maxey, my team would be just as irrelevant as yours. My front office has been just as bad as yours. And so I get it. I feel your pain. But I will say, one thing you said in there makes it hard to feel bad for you. Makes it hard to pin all the blame on Chicago when you were like, I was ready to go 8-9 every year with Justin Fields. You're a loser, Jeff. And I cannot excuse that. I cannot sit here and blame anyone else when you're like, I just wanted to go 8-9. Loser. Fix it. Do better.
I've been trained by the city of Chicago, man. I don't know what you want me to do. I wish they would do better, but everybody in charge of everything.
No. You do better. You do better.
This is a good question, man. What do I have to do better? What does me doing better look like to you?
It means never saying I was ready and excited to go 8-9. I get the skepticism. I get the pessimism. I understand all of it. And if you thought Justin Fields was the guy who was going to lead you to a Super Bowl and they traded him, by all means, trash the team. I get it.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
But you can knock it on here and be like, they traded a guy and we could have been 8-9. And instead they took a chance on a guy who might be bad. That's sports. Suck it up.
No, that I'm fine with that. I'm just saying, like, you're putting me out there if you're the Bears to like be hurt in a different way, because you're like, you know what, you do deserve better. That's what the Bears are saying right now, and kudos to them. The Bears are saying right now, listen, you deserve better as a fan. Mm-hmm. And I have to give credit to the Bears for that. None of the other Chicago teams are doing that. Okay, all of the other Chicago teams are like, you know, the Cubs are very, very like, you know, we want to be good but not too good, like not too good. Okay. We don't want to be too good. And then the I don't even know what the Bulls say. The Bulls are just like, well, we like the play-in. We would love to keep being in the play-in, but it seems like you folks are now getting mad at us again for being in the play-in. Cause that's where we were with Kirk Heinrich and Luol Deng before we lucked in to a generational talent in Derrick Rose. And then we unlucked out of him. This is just—it's been such a ridiculous fall for what was the most identifiable, viable sports team in the world at one point, and now it's just a laughingstock that gets added into three-team deals to take shit that people don't want anymore.
So, you know what, when I looked at the prep sheet, I was like, "There's no way we can do 10 minutes on the Zach LaVine trade." Boy,
sorry,
was I wrong,
dude? I could keep going, dude. I'm so fucking mad. All right, I'm gonna quickly do this, and then we'll get to our last topic here. I want you guys to go to grahamandfist.com. I want you to take advantage of the deals. They're gonna have like I would already bet that there's like a Valentine's Day. I'm probably talking them into something that they don't even have. There's a Valentine's Day deal. Get on that, Graham and Fisk. Get a Valentine's deal going. Get a special box that has Valentine's stuff in it, and then have a special, and then our people will come and they'll buy your stuff. I don't have a promo code. I lied to you guys last week. I will have one by next week. I swear. I promise. But grahamandfist.com. Go check it out right now. Get a little box of wine, little 8-pack, little mixed 8-pack, or a little bubbly for your significant other for Valentine's Day. It'll be a huge hit. I've done it before, and I, you know, full disclosure, worked there when I did it, and so my wife was not happy, but your wife will be happy because you're not connected in any way and will have had to spend money on the actual product. So listen, grahamandfist.com, be there or be square. We have to talk about this. And I apologize. I'm clearly not on my A game, because I am so distraught by the Chicago Bulls, but we're going to talk about the Super Bowl, right? Luka Doncic was such a big story that it overshadowed the Super Bowl for a minute, but we've got the Chiefs and the Eagles coming up. You're wearing the garb. I love that. And I would like you to tell me why you're going to have a really happy Sunday.
I mean, I'm not not convinced Ooh. That I will. I hope.
That's loser shit, Pat.
It's called tempering your expectations, Jeff.
What? That's the same.
No, 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 no. You said you would be happy with 8 and 9. I'm not going to be happy if they lose. I'm just acknowledging that it's a possibility. This is always a really tough part to me when we do the podcast is the matters of your head versus your heart. Now, in this case, I can make a strong argument, you know, for the Eagles. I think that they're legitimately like a really good football team and they could win this game. However, I've also seen the way that the Chiefs play. I've seen them play in these big games, and whether you want to get into the ref thing or not, and in this case, I'm not going to, because I feel like as a fan of a team who's getting ready to face the Chiefs, that's the loser mentality going in, already bitching about the advantage that they're going to have with the refs. Not going to do it. Not even going to talk about it after the game unless it's particularly egregious. Fuck that for a second. Let's just acknowledge the Chiefs are really, really good. They're really talented. They have one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. They have a lot of weapons. And they have a coach who, as Philadelphia fans know, one of the favorite stats that everybody would rattle off, you could pull over anybody in Philadelphia. Pull aside 100 random people in Philadelphia back in the early 2000s to mid-2000s. Elderly women, children, homeless people, whoever you got, pull them aside and be like, what's Andy Reid's record after a bye week? And everybody would know it because it was basically undefeated. He is one of the best coaches to ever do this. Mahomes is one of the best quarterbacks to ever do this. I think that's the biggest advantage that the Chiefs have. I think in a sport where oftentimes games are won by quarterbacks and coaches, I like Jalen Hurts a lot. There's a reason that the Eagles are undefeated in the playoffs when Jalen Hurts throws for under, I think it's like 160 yards. And I think winless when he throws for over 160. They win with their rushing game, which is not, it's atypical in today's NFL. Andy Reid is a better coach than Nick Sirianni. Patrick Mahomes a better quarterback than Jalen Hurts. The Eagles have a lot going for them. That rushing game is absolutely incredible. They win the war in the trenches. Their line is better. If they can get ahead, if they can get a lead and just keep feeding the ball to Saquon or Jalen running options to just sort of keep the clock moving, if they can control the clock, they can win this game. Absolutely. There's no doubt in my mind. However, I've seen the Chiefs come up big in too many big games to go into this one overconfident. Of course, I'm going to pick the Eagles. Of course, I'm going to say the Birds are going to win. Of course. But I'm not going to be so cocky as to say that this is, you know, a decision I'm making with my head as opposed to my heart. That is a heart decision. My head says it's a toss-up. I think whichever team scores first is going to win the game. That's my official prediction. Whatever team scores first is going to win the game, and they're going to control. They're going to control the tempo. That's my prediction.
I love that. Yeah, this is such an interesting matchup again, along with, the Chiefs beating the Bills to get here. The wild thing is, it's like we're kind of in this situation of like two different like, oh, you fucked up curses, right? The Bills actually traded the Chiefs the pick in which the Chiefs drafted Patrick Mahomes, right? That's how the Chiefs ended up with Patrick Mahomes. The Eagles fired Andy Reid. So the Chiefs hired Andy Reid. It just, some of that like sports, you know, your cursed synergy that's out there. I am going to be a little boring talking about this because the thing I keep thinking about that I really think is going to decide the game, and, you know, none of these guys, I don't think, have a shot at winning MVP. One of the quarterbacks will win, or Saquon could possibly win. let's be honest, if the Chiefs win, it's going to be Patrick Mahomes. It's going to be, you know, Xavier Worthy scoring three touchdowns isn't going to fucking do anything. Like, Patrick Mahomes can get the MVP. I think this game is going to end up being one from guard to guard, right? The interior of those lines, guard through guard, you know, with the center in the middle, the two defensive tackles. That's how I think this. It's so, so boring. But, you know, on one side, you've got Davis and Jalen Carter, who might be the best defensive tackle in football right now on the Eagles. And he's going up against, you know, Creed Humphrey, who might be the best center in football. And Trey something is their guard. And he on the Chiefs, and he is... He's a Pro Bowler, and Thuney on the other side. Like, the Chiefs' interior of their line is so, so good, and it allows Mahomes a little more time to navigate through the pocket, because, like, it's like that interior isn't going to collapse, so you're going to be able to move somewhere.
Yeah.
But this defensive line is very different, because not only do they have that, then they got guys like, you know, Sweat on the outside. They can come get you that way. You have Vic Fangio running the defense, who is a Hall of Fame defensive coordinator, probably the best going, and has been for a really, really, really long time. They really improved their secondary after that took a step back, I think, last year, and they added talent in that way. Then you look at the other side of the ball, and again, guard to guard, pretty good for the Eagles, a little banged up. Right now, a little banged up, or at least it was. This bye week probably helps. But you've got a good interior there going up against Chris Jones. And Chris Jones is a bad, bad dude that can wreck a game, especially an important one. I think you're going to be able to know fairly quickly based on how those matchups are looking. If Jalen Carter's getting penetration, the Eagles are going to win this game. But it's going to be really hard for Jalen Carter. Like, this is going to be one of the hardest. Do the Chiefs have to slide Creed Humphrey over to his right all the time because Jalen Carter's there? That's a huge question in this game for me. And if they do, I really, really like the Eagles' chances. The other thing I like about this, if you've watched the Chiefs this season, obviously, you know, 15-2, they've been winning the playoffs. They look great against the Bills. But if you watch them throughout the season, it was a lot of late one score victories. And like, how did they win that game? Or like, they don't seem that good.
Yeah. There was some stat that was like mind blowing that was going around in the middle of the season where it's like, here are the records of teams. There are like four teams that haven't scored 30 points in a game this season. Here are their records. And the first three were all like 1-12. And then the Chiefs were like 11-2. Or something, despite never scoring that.
Yeah, and teams just kick themselves in the wiener consistently against the Kansas City Chiefs. They just consistently do it, and they allow Patrick Mahomes to be like, okay, this is how I have to beat you today, then this is how I'm going to beat you. And then teams freak out all over themselves, and they lose these games. I think the advantage that the Eagles have is that Nick Sirianni is too stupid to overcoach them. I don't think he has the talent as a coach to go nuts on coaching them. So much so that he's like, we can't make mistakes and we're not going to get the calls and we're all going to do, you know, all this sort of stuff. I don't think Nick Sirianni is saying that. I think Nick Sirianni is going into practice and being like, we're going to kick the fucking shit out of this team.
And, you know, good.
Yes, I agree.
Listen, the Eagles approach. Do I still have you?
Yep.
All right. I got when I forget to mute my calls, they come through on my computer as well. So every time I get a junk call, everything goes haywire on my end. So I'm sorry. And leave that in. Don't edit any of that out.
I'm not taking that out at all.
I need people to know the lengths I go to make this podcast work. Nick Sirianni, the beautiful thing is, like, the Eagles' approach should be very simple. You have an offensive line that is outstanding, and you have two great runners, one at quarterback, one at running back. Just turn them loose. I don't need any Detroit Lions trick play horse shit. I don't need Philly, the Philly special. I don't need any of that. No double reverse. Don't do any of that. When I was a kid, I remember the two top running backs in the NFL were Emmitt Smith and Barry Sanders. And they were very different because Emmitt Smith's offensive line would open up holes that you could drive a Mack truck through. And Barry Sanders was just running for his life and had to bust out every move in the Madden playbook, the juke, the spin, the stiff arm. He had to do all of that just to survive. The Eagles have the luxury of both. They're getting the Emmitt Smith offensive lines, and by the way, in the cases where they don't open up, Saquon Barkley can reverse hurdle, you know, over the defender. Sirianni, I don't know if he's a good, but it's kind of like Dave Roberts in baseball. Is he a good manager? I don't know. He's got two World Series rings. All Sirianni has to do is give the ball to the players and let them do their thing. It's a beautifully constructed roster. The simpler, the better for him. He just has to stay out of the way. And I think that they'll be fine.
I think that that's the sort of attitude, too, that you need if you're going to beat the Chiefs. Like, you need to go in not being like, oh, this is a big game, or like, oh, it's fucking, all this stuff's going to, we have to work extra hard to beat this team because blah, 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 blah. The thing I like about the Eagles in this Super Bowl is that they have a coach that is just, he just strikes me as dumb. And he's going to go in and he's going to be like, look it, we're going to beat this team's ass. And that's that. I don't care anything happens. We're just going to beat them so convincingly it's not going to matter. I don't know. I love it. That's why I would pick the Eagles. But I'm not going to pick the Eagles because the other team has Patrick Mahomes. So you can go fuck yourself. Chiefs by a touchdown.
I have to say my confidence very quickly erodes when you're like, you know what your team has going for it? The coach is functionally illiterate and has no business being a coach.
I'll tell you this much. He knows how to hire people. That's a huge, huge thing. A lot of coaches don't know how to hire people. Nick Sirianni can hire a motherfucker. And they're playing hard for him. They're in the Super Bowl. They've been to two Super Bowls with this guy. I probably don't know what I'm talking about. I just know when that guy talks, I'm like, I'm not convinced you're very smart, but I also think that can be useful.
All I know is if the Eagles don't win, then that guy fell off the top of a telephone pole to his death for nothing. And I don't want to live in that world. So go Birds.
Go Birds indeed. Oh, man. All right. Are you ready to play a little game? I did something a little new. We haven't played anyone like this before.
Yeah, let's go.
Ready for this? Okay. So what I did was, I went on to Basketball Reference, and one of the fun things about going on Basketball Reference, or really any of the sports references pages, is they always have this section that is the nicknames, and a bunch of these nicknames, you're just like, I've never heard that player called that ever.
Yes. I'm so glad. Hey, did we talk about this previously, or is this just a thought we've had independently? Because for years, I've been like, putting in the back of my mind and then forgetting we have to do a game with basketball nicknames because they're all wrong.
Yes. So now if you look at the rundown sheet, I gave you the entire, what I did was I took the NBA All-Star rosters. Okay. So I'm going to read those off for the folks playing at home. Ready? So we have Giannis Antetokounmpo. We have Donovan Mitchell, Karl Anthony Towns, Jalen Brunson, Jason Tatum, Jalen Brown, Darius Garland, Evan Mobley, Tyler Hero, Pascal Siakam, Cade Cunningham, Dame Lillard, Steph Curry, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Nikola Jokic, Kevin Durant, LeBron James, Anthony Edwards, James Harden, Alperen Şengün, Anthony Davis, Jaren Jackson Jr., Jalen Williams, and Victor Wembanyama. Jalen Williams really sticks out like a sore thumb.
You're not kidding.
You just like randomly say Jalen Williams and you're like, fucking what? So most of these players, very well known, and you probably know some of their nicknames. Now, I couldn't avoid doing some of the nicknames that you're definitely going to know. So I'm going to knock those out pretty quickly on, but I'm going to try to mix these up pretty good. Okay. Now, there's also a case of a player that there's no nickname listed, which I've never seen before. And so I don't even know what we're going to do with that. Maybe I'll save that player to the end. Actually, wow. Yeah, the last question will be who has a nickname between these two players. Are you ready to play this game? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you the nickname, and I want you to match the player.
Got
okay?
It. Yeah.
So here we go. We're going to start here. All right, let's start with SGA.
Would that be Shea Gilgeous-Alexander?
That Shea Gilgeous-Alexander is correct. Again, I just wanted to get some of these out of there, and it really depresses me when somebody doesn't have a creative nickname. That means, to me, that means you have a color commentary thing that's not really working that hard. So do better, okay? Do better, color commentary team of the Oklahoma City Thunder. Okay, ready? Here comes the next one. The next one is... Spicy P.
Spicy. I don't want to take too much time looking through the names because I feel like that's cheating. So off the top of my head, I'm going to go, Spicy P is, Pascal Siakam.
That is Pascal Siakam. I had never heard Pascal Siakam called Spicy P before. Nothing of his game, feels particularly spicy. So I thought that that was a really weird one. We're going to go with, a completely boring one. But it's different than anyone I've ever heard before for this player, Big Body.
Ooh,
is the nickname. Body. Big Body.
Hang on. Do I have you?
Yeah.
Another call came in. Big Body, sheesh. Let's go with, I'm taking too much time. Let's just, let's go with, Jalen Brunson.
Jalen Brunson is correct. Okay. Congratulations on that one. I did not think you were going to get that one. Next one. Let's knock this out real quick. Spider.
Donovan Mitchell.
They also list Spida without the ER. So just, you know, for, if you're looking to call Donovan Mitchell by his nickname. Let's knock this one out. The alphabet.
Am I supposed to know this?
No.
Oh.
I know they called him this.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's somebody with like a lot of letters in their name, like Giannis comes to mind. Antetokounmpo. I think a lot of the best players have. Because I've been on Basketball Reference, they'll have like three that I've heard of and then one that I never have. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go Giannis.
Giannis is correct. The alphabet is Giannis Antetokounmpo. I've never heard him called that before. I just recently learned how to say his name properly. And that's why you'll always hear me say the whole thing. But yeah, the alphabet is apparently.
I'm convinced somebody did this to make a dork look like a dork at a party.
Yes.
Like, imagine you're a dork and you get invited to the cool kids party, right, for the first time, and you're trying to fit in, and they're all talking about Giannis, and you're just like, oh yeah, the alphabet. Love the alphabet. And they're like, what the fuck did you just say? And you're like, that's his nickname. And they're like, it certainly is not. He's the Greek freak. And you're like, nah, everybody calls him the alphabet. I looked it up. You're never getting invited to the party ever again.
Yes. Okay. We're going to knock this one out. Ant-Man.
Anthony Edwards.
Anthony Edwards, that is correct. I wonder if you'll get this one. Sub-Zero.
Damian Lillard.
That's correct. Damian Lillard. You are kind of
jersey numbers
bodying this. You're big bodying this game right now.
We got a long way to go.
How about Special K?
Oh God.
This is a weird one.
The party drug? Special K, I mean, I'm looking at the list real quick, and you don't have first and last name, so that makes it a little bit tougher in a good way. But the only K I even see here is Karl Anthony Towns, so I guess I'll go with Cat.
Cat is the correct answer for Special K. Again, never heard him say that ever in the entire history of me knowing him. All right. Now one of my favorite ones, the Black Panther.
Huh.
How great is that one? I hope they actually call him this.
Wow. The Black Panther. So it's somebody who is, blocks a lot of shots. But it can't be like it. I can't imagine it's Wemby because he is, you know,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Can't you get it? You understand what I'm saying? We're all on the same page here. Evan Mobley.
Evan Mobley is incorrect. That's your first miss. So we're going to keep the Black Panther out there for now. I don't want you to get a second guess. We'll just leave it till the end. Let's knock this one out. The extraterrestrial.
Is that Wemby?
That is Wemby. Yep. 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 How about J-Dub?
Would that be Jalen Williams?
That is Jalen Williams. Like, can you imagine? If that was my nickname, I would be so sad. What a terrible nickname that is. Street clothes.
AD.
That is AD. That is absolutely AD. Correct.
They have insulting nicknames on there? That's so funny. Street clothes is great. Holy shit. Okay.
Another one that I hope is self-explanatory. Alpi.
Sengun.
Yep. Alperen Sengun. This is one of my favorites that I've ever seen. And if I ever heard anybody call him this, like, this is a roast battle shot. Jimbo Slice.
Jimbo Slice.
Jimbo Slice.
Damn.
Think of.
Oh, that's so good.
Isn't it good?
So much better than the beard. Jimbo Slice is incredible. Whoever came up with that. Yeah.
Yeah. For James Harden, Jimbo Slice.
Whoever came up with that is brilliant.
Yeah. We're getting to some of my favorites here. I'm going to knock this one out because I hate it. Boy Wonder.
I feel like I should know this, but I don't. Jaren Jackson Jr.
No, not Boy Wonder. So we're going to hold on to that one as well. this one is just old man.
LeBron?
No, it's not LeBron. So we're going to hold on to that one. How about Taco J?
Is that Jaren Jackson Jr.?
No.
Taco J
is such a funny nickname that I can't believe. Never mind, we'll get to it. Motorcade. I think this is a really good one.
Cade Cunningham.
Yeah, that's Cade Cunningham.
That is Detroit. Yeah,
that's so good. That's a good one. Threesis.
Steph.
That's Steph. The Cookie Monster.
Immediately Zion comes to mind, but he's not on.
Your mind is working right.
Yeah.
Play the list you have though.
I'm looking at it right now. The Cookie Monster. Jokic?
It is Jokic. Nikola Jokic is apparently called the Cookie Monster sometimes.
I'll take it.
Benjamin Buckets. Great.
Benjamin Buckets. Okay, so somebody who's old and is still getting buckets. KD?
No. The Servant.
That's KD. And I hate that name. I never got it. I always thought KD came up with it himself, I believe.
I don't like it.
It's terrible.
And it's probably because he came up with it himself.
Slim Reaper is much better.
Slim Reaper is one of the greatest nicknames of all time. Okay. The last one I have is Boog. And you're not going to get this one because it doesn't make any sense. B-O-O-G. Jason. No, not Jason Tatum. Okay. So here are the ones, here are the players we have left and the nicknames we have left. Okay. Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Darius Garland, Evan Mobley, Tyler Hero, LeBron James, Jaren Jackson Jr. And the nicknames we have left are Taco J, Boy Wonder, Boog, Old Man, Block Panther, and Benjamin Buckets. So, one of these doesn't have a nickname, remember.
Who did we have after LeBron? Who's still available? Run through that list again. You got Tatum, Jaylen Brown.
Aaron Jackson Jr. was left after LeBron.
Okay.
So, let's start here again. Give me a different Taco J.
Jaylen Brown.
Is that
who I said the first time?
I thought it was, but no. You said Jaren Jackson Jr. the first time.
All right.
Okay. All right. So let's go Block Panther.
I'll take the loss on that. I can't just keep naming guys with J's in their name.
All right. Taco J is Jason Tatum, which is like kind of like a...
would have been my next guess.
Doesn't make any sense, but here we go. All right. So who is Benjamin Buckets?
LeBron.
LeBron is correct. Who is the Block Panther?
Mobley. Wait, no, I already guessed that, right? All right, so who's left? Jaylen Brown,
mm-hmm.
Darius Garland,
Tyler Hero.
It better not be Tyler Hero.
And Jaren Jackson Jr.
I'm gonna go Tyler Hero.
It's Jaren Jackson Jr., dude. Come on.
Tyler Hero is funnier. It's a funnier guess.
All right, who's
very clear who it was at that point, but
who's Boy Wonder?
That's going to be Jaylen Brown. Oh, wait, no. Did I say that the first time? Darius Garland.
No, it's not. It's Tyler Hero. Last name Hero. So he is the Boy Wonder. You see, that's, I think, how they got to that.
I was thinking Tyler of the hip-hop producer, Boy Wonder.
Okay. Now, how about Old Man? You have Darius Garland, Evan Mobley, and Jaylen Brown. Who is known as the Old Man?
Jaylen Brown.
That is correct. I don't know if that's because of how he looks or because of how he plays, but that's what they call him. All right. We have two Cleveland Cavaliers left. It's Darius Garland and Evan Mobley. One does not have a nickname, and one they call Boog. Who's Boog?
Darius Garland is Boog.
Darius Garland is Boog, and Evan Mobley does not have a nickname yet. Now that he's an all-star, we got to get that corrected. He's too good a player.
Yeah.
He's too good a player. He's taking a step forward. He deserves some wacky ass nicknames. You're going to make him, you know, live in Cleveland in my old house. That's what's going to happen. So let's get some nicknames for Evan Mobley. He actually did way better than I thought you would do.
Me too.
But it was mostly just an excuse for me to say Jimbo Slice and find out that was James Harden, because my God, that's just glorious. All right, we're going to finish this up with a quick little segment here called If I May. If I May, Pat, I don't know if you have seen this New Orleans Saints Catholic Church thing. You familiar with what I'm talking about?
I'm not.
So the New Orleans Saints, the franchise, were working with the Archbishop in New Orleans to put pressure on different places in government, in media, all these different places to alter and change lists of priests who have been accused of sexual assault with kids, you know, as the Catholic Church does. And apparently the Saints are just all over this. So like they've been, you know, getting judges to do specific things, getting, you know, state representatives to do. And apparently, like, a lot of people knew about this, and it's like the president of their team. It's the owner of the team. It's the communications person of the team. Really feels like we're scratching just the tip of the iceberg for an organization to aid in covering up sexual assault by multiple priests in the Catholic Church in New Orleans over years and years and years. And I just want to say that we've had this happen a couple times. It seems like once a year, an owner shows who they truly are, and they are forced to sell this team. And I very much hope that Roger Goodell is going to force the New Orleans Saints to be sold. You can't have something like this with the league. Dan Schneider is a piece of shit. He is a terrible, horrible person. This is worse than anything Dan Snyder did. This is worse. So if he is going to be forced to sell Washington, which he should have been, the same should be true for the folks in New Orleans. So I saw that today and had to say something about it. I hope that there is significant consequence. And you know what I mean? The significant consequence is going to be that they can sell their team for, you know, $5.5 billion.
Right, I was going to say.
But the fact of the matter is, like, you don't get to play the game anymore, right? Sell your team, go on Rogan, rehab your image with the right wing, and you'll be fine.
By the way, I love the Freudian slip of calling Dan Snyder, former Redskins owner Dan Snyder, who I believe was the other pedophile from Quiet on the Set, the Nickelodeon documentary.
That's exactly right. I realized I did it, and I was like, whoops. I don't think Dan Snyder did that. He did some bad stuff, though. So we're just going to roll. Oh, boy.
Yeah, I was unaware of that. Watching the news is just awful.
Pretty relentless.
Yeah. Unrelated to anything. This was going to be the year where I'm like, I'm not talking politics. I'm not getting involved in anything. I'm whatever people want to believe, they can believe, it's cool. I'm going to sit back. And then within the first 2 weeks, it's like Nazi salute and like we're blaming black people for plane crashes where all the pilots were white. You know what I mean? I'm just like, Jesus Christ, you guys are really, you're really fucking testing me. Let the record show, I didn't say what my opinions were on those things one way or the other. So I haven't even talked about it. It's just, I'm saying they're testing me. Mine was going to be a lot less serious. It was just going to be, I saw a report that came out that Jimmy Butler said, he told the Golden State Warriors that he will not sign a long-term extension there. Jimmy Butler is not good enough anymore to be dictating things to this degree. By the way, I'm fine with him coming out and saying to the Warriors, I will not sign an extension there. That's totally fine. But then shut the fuck up about demanding to get traded. You can't have it both ways. You can't have the demand to get traded, which, by the way, this is not an isolated incident. He's gone through this in everywhere he's ever been for his entire career. And pretend that you're still good enough to choose your destination. That's reserved for the top 20 players on earth. That is a category you no longer fit into, Jimmy Butler. So I'm fine with you telling that, hey, I'm not gonna sign an extension there. Then at some point, you're going to have to accept the fact that you are not good enough to call your shots anymore, and you might have to suck it up and stop being a fucking baby and go play for the Miami Heat and not, you know, force your way out of town. You could choose either I'm going to force my way out of town or I'm going to behave. And if I'm not going to behave, that's fine, but you might not get to choose the exact team that you go to because you're not good enough to do that anymore.
Yeah, that's a real scourge on society, I think, in general, is the and I'm sure it's I'm sure I'll go through it. I'm sure you'll go through some version of it where it's like you get to a point where you're not good enough to do the thing anymore that you were like really like you were best at in your life. And you don't understand that anymore. So you take it out on everybody else. A lot of comics go through this, right? I think that's a lot of where the like, oh, you can't work at colleges anymore. It's like, no, motherfucker, like you can't work at colleges anymore because you haven't adapted or you've been going to too many places where people are just laughing at everything. Your time has passed. Now, some greats just are everlasting, and like that's how you know a true great, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's how you look at LeBron or Mike or any of those, you know, those sorts of players, Tom Brady, where it's just like a consistency. It was like I was always the best at my thing. But there's also like for most people, there comes a time where you're like not that dude anymore.
Sure.
And dealing with that is such a wild thing. Jimmy Butler clearly going through right that. Like, whoever makes that deal, like, good for them. Like, I would not put
Jimmy
any money.
Jimmy Butler, he's quickly become Antonio Brown without the benefit of the doubt in terms of having CTE. Like, he doesn't even get hit in the head, so I don't know what his fucking problem is.
That's a good comp. That's a really
Antonio Brown were like, oh yeah, well this is also kind of sad because it seems like you're all fucked up. But Jimmy Butler is just being an asshole. So that's my take. And anybody who trades for him, you deserve whatever you get. I mean, it's...
yeah. For somebody who had such a really miraculous being the 30th pick in the draft by a team that then traded you and then developing into a superstar is quite a thing. And you're not a superstar anymore. That sucks, but it is what it is and deal with it. You're just kind of being an asshole at the moment. Exactly. So yeah, that's it. We did it. We did another one. I mean, just like a couple day turnaround too. This is a, now we're really cooking with gas. So listen, we need you to rate, review, subscribe. We need more people watching on YouTube. We need more people listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, wherever else you get your podcasts, reviews and subscriptions. Those always help us out. Not financially yet, but they could at some point. So that could be something special you should be a part of. We've been doing pretty good keeping up with the Instagram. We're going to try to get more out on the socials as we go as well. You can follow me at highmotorguy.bsky.social.com. Again, Blue Sky, if you're going to compete with this fucking guy, can we just clean that thing up? If you clean that thing up, you got a shot. But that was really hard for me to say. Pat, where can they follow you?
The Pat Barker, T-H-E Pat Barker, Pornhub.biz.
Oh my God. Well, thanks for sticking around and listening to another episode, everybody. It was wonderful to have you. My name is Jeff Suing.
I'm Pat Barker.
And we will see you guys next week.
Bye, everybody.
Hey, like the reverse. I love it.
Yeah, I figured it out.